At KKCR, thanks for tuning in to Kauai Community Radio. Today, it's now time for Talk Story Radio, and we've got a really cool episode of Story for All today. We were just listening to the Iwi Kupuna talk that was put on by OHA last week at Waipa, and that was a continuation of meetings that have been happening out there. I will play the last 15 minutes of that meeting. At the end of this broadcast, you can expect to hear that in the 10 o'clock hour. But for now, I have got Angela Zussman on the phone with me right now. Angela, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
All right. Thanks for coming, for tuning in and for talking with us today and for preparing this episode of Story for All. What have we got today?
Yes. Talk Story Radio Kauai. So, yes, again, I'm excited about the show. This show is actually a little bit different from previous shows that we've done. We get to hear from about 8 or 10 people in this show. So this is a little bit of a pastiche of a group of people, one at a time. I went to Koi Day at Waipa Foundation. They do this on Thursday mornings. And I got to talk to a lot of the people who were there at Koi Day, some longtime volunteers, some staff. So what you're going to hear is a medley of all these folks talking about Koi. And the interview wraps up with a really interesting conversation with Opo Ke'ali'i Hudson. He's one of the elders in the community who has been coming to support Koi Day for decades. And he speaks a little bit more about this spiritual and cultural significance of Koi in Hawaiian culture. So it's a really rich, everyone will stay from beginning to end. And I look forward, as always, to hearing people's responses to this content.
I love it. I'm very interested in this show. I know Poi has so much significance to Kauai, to Kauaian people and Hawaiian people in general. I'm just so blessed to have it here and to have people's stories and memories surrounding it too. So this is going to be a very special episode, I think. And Story for All, we do this every week. I tell everyone what Story for All is. Angela, what's Story for All? What do you do?
What is Story for All? I often ask myself. Story for All is a nonprofit organization that I founded about, 13, 15 years ago. And the purpose of Story for All is to help lift up the voices of people, mostly from historically marginalized communities, for the sake of healing, first of all. It's really healing to be able to have your voice heard. And it's also helping to build connections between people maybe who wouldn't have felt they had much connection before, and also to help inform policy. We are very strong believers that the people who are impacted by policy should have a voice in making that policy, and that's part of the mission of Story for All.
Mm. I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much for putting this together. Thanks for Poi Day Talk Story today. And listeners, if you have to step out and you miss a little bit, you'll be able to find this on the KKCR Org archives at kkcr.org. Go to the archives tab, and there's a special Story for All Talk Story Radio page that you can find all of the episodes that we've done here at KKCR. So you can find that there. Angela, thanks. I love our partnership because KKCR is all about telling the stories of our Native peoples, too. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are an amazing partner. I want to thank you and your team. Also, the sponsors of KKCR. I believe so much in the power of community radio, being thanks. Able to speak to, for, and about the people in their own communities. Now more than ever, it's really important that we listen to everybody. Mm-hmm. We try to come to a place of really understanding one another, and you guys are really great at helping to present different points of view.
Thank you
so much for the role you play.
Thanks. I love it. And if you have a story topic, listeners out there, if you've got an episode that you believe that these kupuna need to be heard or something, you can email me at gm@kkcr.org, or you can give us a call at the office at 826-7774. Thanks.
Thank you. Please do. We've gotten some great show ideas from you guys in the audience. So
yes.
If there's a story that needs to be told, if there's an organization else's work needs to be featured? Is there someone doing good work or with knowledge that you think other people would benefit from? Please let us know. That's what the purpose of Talk Story Radio Kauai is.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to know it, and we want to put it out to the world, and not only put it out in the world, but archive it for future generations to be able to hear and know. So, great.
Snapshot in
time. So cool. So, is there anything else you want to say before we get started?
No, we'll be kicking off in this recording with a message from the executive director of Waipa Foundation, and then from there you'll hear, like I said, different voices. Each person speaks, and then there's a little, you know, moment of music in between. So I hope you enjoy this format. I'm excited to listen to it too.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I will talk to you later. Thanks, Angela. And here now is Story for All.
Aloha kakou. I'm Stacey Sproat, Executive Director of the Waipa Foundation, a Hawaiian community-based nonprofit that manages the 1,600-acre ahupua'a Waipa. Located just past Hanalei, Waipa Foundation's purpose is to be a living learning center as a space to elevate and share Hawaiian values and practices and to inspire all who visit to adopt and incorporate them into their lives and worldview. We believe that many Hawaiian values are universal values and that they benefit not just Hawaii, but our global community. In the last few years, we've been fielding requests from interested young people to reconnect with Aina culture and community and find career paths that can bring them back home to serve their community. To meet this need, we've launched multiple internship programs. This series highlights our internship programs, our amazing staff, their journeys through life and to Waipa, and the extraordinary service they offer to our community every day. They inspire me and give me hope for the future of our island and communities. I hope they inspire you. You can find out more about us and reach out at waipafoundation.org. Mahalo.
Now.
Aloha kakou. I'm Stacey Sproat, Executive Director of the Waipa Foundation, a Hawaiian community-based nonprofit that manages the 1,600-acre ahupua'a of Waipa. Located just past Hanalei, Waipa Foundation's purpose is to be a living learning center as a space to elevate and share Hawaiian values and practices and to inspire all who visit to adopt and incorporate them into their lives and worldview. We believe that many Hawaiian values are universal values and that they benefit not just Hawaii, but our global community. In the last few years, we've been fielding requests from interested young people to reconnect with Aina culture and community and find career paths that can bring them back home to serve their community. To meet this need, we've launched multiple internship programs. This series highlights our internship programs, our amazing staff, their journeys through life and to Waipa, and the extraordinary service they offer to our community every day. They inspire me and give me hope for the future of our island and communities. I hope they inspire you. You can find out more about us and reach out at waipafoundation.org. Mahalo nui.
Okay, we are here with Amber Chong, and Amber is on the staff here at Waipa. What's your role here at Waipa?
I'm a foraging technician is the title that I've been given.
Okay. All right, tell us what's going on here. We hear the sounds of poi production in the background. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, so it's all been run through the mill over there, and now they're distributing it into the bags, which get sent out across the island, and you can see Loke and Danielle have what I think is one of the most advanced or like skillful jobs here. They're, you know, scooping it into the bags with their hands and, you know, keeping it from dripping all over. Then you kind of tell like the weight of it from like from their hand. And then we have the assembly line of everyone putting it into bags and tying them up and sorting them into buckets. They're all different sizes with like the 1 pound, 2 pound, and then those go to different orders and get sent to Kapa'a, Lihue, all the way to the west side.
I noticed that both of the ladies, they would dip their hand into the poi and then do this kind of twist with their wrist. that enabled it to just go directly into the bin, right, without anything dripping. So that's an acquired skill.
Yes, I don't have it, but they definitely do. It keeps it from just splashing all over the side. And it's kind of, they have the exact weight down by feel, which is amazing.
So this is the end of the process.
Yeah,
what
this is the last step.
What took place earlier today?
The first step is, you know, you peel all the skin off and then those get sorted. You have the kalopa'a, which are the like harder, firmer ones. And some people, you know, will just eat those. So we bag some of those. And then they have all the other ones that they put into the bins for the second round of cleaning, where you're like kind of scraping off with a knife and cutting them in just pieces, taking out any of the little like blemishes or guava seed rot, we call it. And then from there goes into the mill.
And in the mill?
And over there, I think they just push all the little pieces through and add water so it gets to the consistency that you see over here.
And I see it comes out in big vats.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then it's delivered to this line here.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Okay, so in the mill area is where they kind of mix it. They grind it and then sort of mix it. It's just water?
Yeah, it's just kalo and water.
Okay. All right, good. What is your favorite part of this process?
Really seeing everyone, first and foremost. I think when you get here in the morning and everyone's already here and you get to sit down and just catch up with people, talk about the week and see how everyone's doing, that's the most fun part for me. But with the kalo, I just love the smell too. It's like, I always describe it as a mix of the scent of like fresh baked bread and that scent right before it rains. Like if you put those together, that's how I feel like the smellscape is when you come in the morning and it's just coming out of the steamer. So just sitting here and peeling it and like basking in that scent, love that.
Thank you. Do you eat poi?
Yeah.
What's your favorite way to eat it?
Just like straight from there. Like I love it. I like sour too, but when it's fresh, I usually take my like the mahele, the little bag that we get at the end, back and just we'll eat it all in one go. You just take like you take the bag.
All right, we got this, a bag in hand,
and
here.
You just like snip the end and just like squirt it into your mouth like icing.
It's almost like a frosting bag. You just squirt it right
exactly.
in the mouth. Okay, that's good for our kids listening. I'm sure they're going to want to try that.
Yeah.
And then what about like deeper significance of poi, spiritually or otherwise? Does it play like a cultural significance in your life? I know it's delicious, but
yeah.
What
else? I mean, I think it has a lot of layers of significance. I think, you know, working in the lo'i especially and like thinking about what it teaches us about relationality and obligation to other than human species, right? Like the premise that humans and kalo need each other to survive. The kalo needs farmers, needs people here to harvest it, to cut off the stalks and to replant them in order for those generations to perpetuate. And then we also rely on it as sustenance, as like a life force, I think on that level. And then I think Poi Day also teaches me a lot about what community care looks like. I think, you know, for Waipaa, they have to go to lengths to keep kalo affordable. And it teaches me a lot about what food justice means, what community-based economic development means, how to build a sort of food system that is founded upon serving kupuna, is founded upon serving community members. I think that's really powerful. And that, too, relates to the fundamental idea of reciprocal caretaking that kalo teaches us.
Amazing. And what is the role of the volunteers in all this?
I think it's about, bringing together people to create this poi to send out all over the island. But I think it's also about building a community beyond, like, the Waipaa staff and having more people come in and be a part of Waipaa's work and really building up Waipaa as this community hub that brings people together.
What age people do you get here at Poi Day?
Sometimes we have really little ones, which is fun. People like bring their kids and then all the way to kupuna who have been here since the very beginning. I think they've been doing it for around 40 years now. And I've heard that it's changed a lot in that time. So I've heard that way back, if you were like my age, you were just in the dishwashing pit the entire time. Like you had to earn your way up, right?
So that's around 20s?
Yeah.
You weren't even out near the Kalo at all.
I've heard this was the way back in the day. But I think now they have people mixed in doing all kinds of work. But it used to be, like the kupuna who had like the expertise to sort the Kalo, to peel it, and you had to earn your way up there.
Mm-hmm. But now it's open. It's a way of people coming in and getting to experience Waipa.
Yeah. So it's pretty open to people. I think there's definitely the regulars who have been coming every single week without fail since the beginning. And then there's new people in the community who have recently maybe arrived on the North Shore and want to meet people, want to be involved with this organization, want to learn more about the land or what land stewardship means in this context. Sometimes we have visitors who somehow hear about it, or maybe they like have been on their past trips and every time they're in town they want to come through. Sometimes we have different like school groups or visiting groups that will come and sit and learn about it. So,
okay, if there was one thing you wanted people to know about Poi, what is it?
One thing about Poi, I have to think about that for a second.
It could be more than one if you're like having a competition in your head.
That's a good question. I think I would hope that people eat it and think about that sense of reciprocity and what it means to provide that same sort of nourishment back that it offers to you.
Eating poi with that in mind. Anything you want to add?
That's all. Yeah, thank you so much talking.
Okay, so tell me what Chris does here in relationship to the poi.
Yeah, so it's Chris and Loke, and they both, I think, manage the lo'i, so they're in charge of everything from the beginning to, you know, planting the stalks, the huli, and like taking care of the lo'i, checking the water levels and leading the harvests and everything. And then they steam it, they, you know, get everything out. They probably start like, probably 4:30 or 5 a.m. or something like that this morning, you know, unloading the steamers, getting it into the bin so it's all ready for people to start peeling when volunteers and other staff get here. And, you know, as all the volunteers are doing that, they're running the mill, they're like, you know, packaging it, and they do it all the way to the end where they, you know, load up the poi van, the Waipa poi van, which is somewhere around here, and they drive it out to just along the highway, stopping at different points. So they go like, you know, Anahola and Kapa'a and Lihue, and it goes all the way to the west side, and then another boat takes them to Ni'ihau. So they're just beginning to end.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Okay, so what happens to the kalo that isn't of poi quality?
Yeah, so we collect it all and it goes into those bins that are being pulled away on the tractor right now, and then that goes to our pigs.
So everything is used?
Yeah, and then the pigs get eaten and yeah.
We get our poi any which way. Yeah. Okay, good, thank you. Okay, this is Angela, and I'm with another amazing staff person at Waipa named Ty. Ty, can you say and spell your first and last names?
Yes, my first name is Ty, T-A-I, and my last name is Mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L.
Okay, right on. I know you do a lot of things here, but what do you do in relationship to poi?
In relationship to poi, I spend about 2 days out of the week helping with the production side of poi, which is the processing of it after it's been pulled, the washing of it, helping with the cooking, and then finally the cleaning and the milling, and that's all. So my job starts right after pulling and ends right before distribution to families.
Okay, what's your favorite part of the process?
My favorite part of the process is probably today, because it's a culmination of everybody's efforts throughout the week. It's a cycle that we do every single week. And Thursday is where we get to wrap everything up and produce it. So you get that bit of honey out of like all the work that you've contributed to throughout the week.
And talk to me a little bit about the significance of poi culturally, even spiritually. Does it have significance to you personally or to your family?
Yeah, it does have significance to me. It's hard because I might not have as much background as everyone else here, but the connection that I have to poi is growing up on the North Shore is I grew up in what used to be the and what is now the breadbasket for poi production and distribution in the state of Hawaii. And so growing up here, it was like a playground and a learning center for us in elementary school up through middle and high school. And it's something that we participated in as groups, but it wasn't something that I'd contributed to further beyond that.
What did you do as a kid?
As a kid, I was brought over to being part of the summer camps. Me and my brother participated in the summer camps from ages like 7 or 8. And then I continued on all the way through until high school and would come back even through college. And I did a lot of work, but I was never a staff member. And so poi is to me like contributing to one of the defining characteristics for me, at least for the North Shore, is poi production, and I get to contribute to that in a way to try and keep it going.
And historically, I mean, this was also like in the hundreds and hundreds of years ago, right? Because kalo has been cultivated here for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel a connection to the ancestors or to that faraway past?
Yeah, we always are really intentional with the work that we do. So when you're pulling kalo in the lo'i, it's like a very serene, it's a very intentional act, especially when you're in the lo'i. And then when it comes down to this stage of production, anyone's hands who touch the poi are really important, and your intentions to which you contribute to the poi is very important. And so on Thursdays, I help with the milling and the actual, like, my hand is applied to the poi after its first and second grind.
Yeah,
and so my hand directly is in a very, like, important and spiritually significant spot. So I feel a connection to that and those ancestors every time that I am here, because I have to act with the right intentions, and I have to be in the right headspace to be able to produce this with love.
How do you prepare yourself?
I am lucky that I have such good coworkers for that. Yeah, I prepare myself just with the space that I'm in, the people that I get to talk to. There are people around here. Everyone contributes in their own way, but Kirstie, who I work with, and Ka'ui, and Auntie Stacy, and a lot of these people who've been here a really long time, they prepare you as you walk in, and the words and the diction and the people that they introduce you to, the way that they carry themselves makes me remember every day to act accordingly.
And I mean, there's a real kuleana, right? Like you're saying, in that actual moment when your hand is in contact with the plant,
mm-hmm.
whether you're pulling it, right, or you're actually preparing it in the kitchen. So is there something that you have going in through your mind, or are you trying to keep your mind quiet, or talk to me about how you kind of get into that mode?
In the moments where my hand is touching the poi, I would not be allowed to touch the poi if I had a sour hand, if I had a bacteria or a heat to my hand that caused the poi to spoil. So when I am allowed to touch the poi in that way, it's usually with people around me, and it's a reminder of how much of a group effort something like this is, how it's only possible with the number of caring hands that we have. So I'm put in that correct headspace with like laughter and joy. It's a storytelling, and we're always just talking story and having fun, and that is like the energy that I have when I'm touching the poi. I'm never angry. I'm never I never act with disrespect, because I have people right next to me that are talking to me and making me laugh, and it's a community. Yeah.
This feels like a metaphor for life. I mean, this feels like, okay, it's a lesson that you're learning in this place at this time, but how do you apply that? Or how has this, or has it kind of taught you about ways of being in the rest of your life?
Being taught about how to live the rest of my life, I'm doing that like very actively right now. I just recently moved back home from being in California because I was seeking community and I was seeking purpose. And so, yeah, these life lessons that I'm learning right now, I'm trying to soak them in and apply them right now. And the full weight of it might not hit me until later, but I'm very happy to be here. Yeah.
Okay, if there's one thing that you want people to know about poi, what is it?
If there's one thing that I want people to know about poi is how much life it brings, how beautiful it is to newborns, and how beautiful it is to people who really value it and can finally get their hands on it. And I've met people from California and Big Island and places all over that have said, oh, like, you're working at Waipaua, like, your poi is the best. And it is the best. I've never really been able to say that too much without it sounding like kind of cocky or like coming across as kind of fake. But like, I don't know, I believe that we make the best poi, and it's because we put a lot of love into it and we put a lot of hard work into it. So I want people to know that what they're tasting is not something that we sell because we're trying to make money. It's something that we want you to taste how wonderful it tastes because of our love for it.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Is there anything you want to add?
No, that's just about everything. Thank you.
Good, thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Kauai Community Radio. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ on Hola, K205 FM in Honolulu. I will let you know that you can find us at 90.9 FM in Hanalei, 91.9 FM island-wide, 88.1 FM in Anahola and Mulawa, 88.9 FM in Oahu, and the 88.1 Anahola and Moloa is a little wide right now, and we're working on pulling that back a little bit so it stays within its little range there. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being our great listeners. What we're listening to now is the pre-recorded interviews that Angela Zussman from Story for All has done at Waipaua's Poi Day. And you can hear people's excitement about poi, about community agriculture, and people coming together for this staple food and staple cultural event. So we'll get back to our selection of interviews now.
Okay, we are at the poi packing line, and who am I talking to right now?
Joanne Kona.
Thank you so much for speaking with me for a moment. Tell me what you're doing right here.
We are bagging the poi and getting it ready to go out where the orders are from. So we distribute here at Waipaua. People pick up Anahola and Lihui and Ele'ele.
And are you a volunteer?
No, I work here.
You work here? Yeah. So what is special to you about making poi available to your community?
I think it's very special because it's indigenous food and it's who we are, and I'm a teacher. Keeping it affordable for locals to keep eating.
Tell me about that affordable piece, because I know that a lot of the poi is produced by volunteers.
Yeah.
So why is that important?
That helps to cut on costs. They volunteer their time, they walk away with a bag for themselves, and So we are able to distribute it at a more affordable price.
Which supports the mission of WIPAW.
Yeah. Providing food for our community and continuing this cultural practice.
How can people find your poi?
They can call the office to order. There's usually poi available to purchase by the self-serve fridge at WIPAW.
Meaning come down here and pick some up. And pay for it, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else you want people to know? Okay, we are at another of the stations, production stations for the poi. What's your name?
Mahie.
Mahie, do you work here or are you volunteer?
Yes, I work here.
Okay, tell me what you're doing right now.
I am putting the poi into trays so that it can be aired out. And it's usually hot when it comes out of the grinder, so we put it in here so it can cool down so it can slow down the aging process, maybe.
What's your favorite thing about poi day?
Getting to see everybody in the community that I don't usually get to see on a daily basis. Yeah.
Why do you think so many people come here for poi day?
Probably for the same reason. Just to hang out with everyone, because all of our employees here don't usually get to work with each other every day. So Thursdays are like the one day that we all get to work together.
Is there something special about poi that brings people together?
Just everyone gathering to help with the process and make poi, and then everybody gets to take home their own little bag. Yeah.
Okay, great. Anything else you want to add? Do you like poi?
Yeah.
What's your favorite way to eat it?
Something salty with kimchi or meat.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Okay, I'm here with a volunteer turn staff. Tell us your name.
Hi, my name's Frances Kaflish.
Okay, and tell me what brings you to Poi Day and how long you've been coming.
Yeah, so I've only been able to come to a couple Poi Days. I think this is about my fourth or fifth, and I've loved being able to come to Poi Day. I think it's such a wonderful opportunity to meet people in the community and be able to work together and contribute towards making food for the community all around island and off island. And I get to work with native plants and do more botanical work normally for my job. And so it's really nice to be able to also work with plants in a more agricultural and food creation setting. Just nice to diversify and then meet people who have such great things to share and who have been working at WIPAW and working in conservation and working in community outreach for a long time and just hear stories and hear insight and get to know people and get to know the food, the Aina better.
Is there anything that comes to mind about something you've learned while being here at Poi Day? I know everyone sort of sits around. There's like four or five people clustered around a table, cleaning the kalo, talking story.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you've heard or learned or that stick with you from these moments with community?
I think one thing that's a little bit more general is just hearing people's life stories about where they've come from and how they've gotten here. And it's really beautiful to hear the twists and turns of people's life. And as a young person myself, kind of like figuring out and navigating what I'm going to do with my life, it's nice to see that so many people have just come back to community throughout their lives, no matter what they've done and where they've gone. It's something that's been so rooted, and I think it's something that I'm definitely trying to become more rooted in as well. So I've really loved that. I think it's also been really nice to learn more about WIPAW, the history of this place, the history of this Ahupua'a and side of the island. And there's so many people with a lot to share.
Anything you want people to know about poi?
It's delicious. I think sometimes people who aren't so familiar with it are scared for some reason to try it, but it is really so delicious. Fresh, a little fermented. I'm still getting the taste of really fermented poi, but it's just delicious. It's so nutritious. It comes from so much love. It's yeah, it's just really a beautiful process and a delicious part of any meal.
How do you eat your poi? What's your favorite way?
I honestly just like to eat it with a spoon, but I also mix yogurt in sometimes and eat it kind of like a sweet little treat on the side. But really, I think it goes well with anything, even on salad. I just like to mix it in.
I love it. We've heard salty, we've heard sweet.
Yeah.
All right, anything else you want to add?
I think that's it. Thanks for interviewing me.
Hello, this is Angela Zussman. Today is Thursday, January 16th. I'm here at Waipa with Uncle K-L-E-E Holden. Uncle, could you please say and spell your name?
K-L-E-E. It's spelled K-E-A-L-I-I. And now I use the Okina between the two I's. In the 50s, when I was born, there was no place for the Okina. There's no square on the box. And so it, in some docs it's one way, in some docs it's another way. What's next?
Your last name? How do you
spell? Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N.
Okay, thank you. And we are here at Waipa. Today is Poi Day. Tell me just a little bit about what brought you here today. And this isn't the first day you've come to Waipa for Poi Day.
That's correct. I've been coming to Poi Day on and off since the 80s. None of this building was here, nor the kitchen. We were down the old section. And it was really organic. The taro was cooked on an open fire in 50-gallon barrels, and the smoke just went up through the ceiling, and it was built for that. If you go over there now, you can still see the smoke stains on that building. So I used to come just to help out with poi production every once in a while. As a teacher, I wasn't available all Thursdays, so I couldn't do that. But now I try to make it every week, don't always make it. But I actually started at Waipa as a teacher. Some of the original participants of the program, some of the folks that lived in Hyena and didn't have real easy access to the high school in Kapa'a, didn't go. And so I ended up teaching a number of people from Wainiha and Haena to do an adult ed program. It's a competency-based high school diploma program. And that's how I got involved. Auntie Linda Sproat, who's a cousin and one of the founders of Waipa, and is also a school teacher, was a school teacher. And she knew that I had been substituting, and she said, "Oh, do you need another job?" I go, "Where?" And so it happened, and we started teaching on the benches in the old section here at Waipa. And the dogs barking, the chickens going off, the fires going. There was actually a family that lived in that old house simultaneously. And so they were doing their dinner thing, and it was indigenous education happening. Not one of my most primitive classrooms, but almost. And kind of fast forward to these last few years, and I've been coming to Waipa fairly religiously, especially after I'm retired. I was just like, I got up this time, so Thursdays I've got set aside for poi. And it's been not just about being here, but meeting the people that come here. Such interesting people end up sitting there around the poi bins and talking story and cleaning kalo. For the native population, it's a sacred thing. And for them, it's like this wonderful cultural process that they never even knew existed. And one of the key points you notice here when people are working, they're laughing. They're smiling, they're laughing, they're joking. And not just volunteers, but you see all the full-time employees and part-time employees, they're all doing that. You hardly hear any directions given, because just there's senior people all around that know what to do, and you don't have to organize and go, you sit here, you sit here. None of that, it just happens organically. Mm. And this is going to jump around a lot.
Well, tell me a little bit about you. You said you come here religiously, which is such an interesting word. What brings you here religiously, and specifically for Poi Day?
That's linked to the place in Hawaiian culture that is uniquely held by Kalo. In one of the creation stories for the Hawaiian people, Kalo is seen as the elder brother of the Hawaiian people, same parents. The first child died, was buried outside the house, and from that plant, from that burial came the first Kalo plant. And then the next offspring of those two deities were humans. So Kalo is seen as a brother to the Hawaiian people. And there's a real spiritual content around it. It's the gift from the gods. And this has been an example of what started as a few outlaws, the founders, growing poi and pushing the big business people at Bishop Estate to change their development plans out here. That was the politics side of it.
Why do you think it was so important to the Waipa founders to be able to cultivate kalo here? To reestablish lo'i?
From their na'au.
Pardon me?
From deep within their soul. I said na'au, which is your gut, and not your heart, but Hawaiians feel it down here more poignantly than I've known many peoples. But having that sacred connection and reestablishing it, I think was really primary in the founders' drive to develop this place. Every one of them had a side job. David Sproat, one of the other founders, he was a fireman. He had a full-time job. But all the spare time and off times, they weren't resting. They were working out here. They had a dream. And they were called radicals and troublemakers and all sorts of those responses that large entities sometimes classify people in. But we were just, excuse me, I don't want to take credit. They were just farmers and teachers and firemen and small farmers that wanted to have a place to do it. And at the same time, One of the more positive things was creating more food on an island that's very able to produce food, but was only producing sugar for the longest time. Well, pineapple. But as sugar started to fade economically, there were all sorts of movements to try to put some land aside for actually growing crops here now that the monoculture of sugar had disappeared. And there were lots of opportunities missed. Kilauea had a huge opportunity. After the mill closed, the gravity-fed irrigation system was still in place. The dams were still fine up Malka and still doing the collection. But the large landowners were selling in big blocks to luxury home, horse ranch kind of places. And it wasn't until Yosh revitalized it. You know who I'm speaking of. Yeah. And but that was also started by Uncle Johnny, Linda Sproat's brother. Mm-hmm. A lot of Hawaiian culture is best taught not in a classroom with a book, but on the land with the objects. My master's was indigenous education, and what constitutes indigenous education. So I had to get all technical for a while. But then when we came right back down to it, it was the person-to-person exchange of information, and it was a hands-on based experiential event. Instead of doing all the thinking and talking, we did the experiencing. It's difficult to talk about something if you haven't touched it or smelled it or sensed it somehow. And I was trying to find out what was the essence of an indigenous lesson plan. But then I realized place was one of the most important parts of the indigenous experience. And it was all hands-on. I remember our family was a fisherman family here. Everybody worked on a hukia. Old folks, teeny kids, everybody had something to do. The old folks, even if the real old could grab onto the rope and walk back or walk to the side with everybody else, and then everybody who participated got a share of fish. So it was at once an economic thing, it was a social thing, it was a social welfare thing, and it was a community together doing it. And in those days, everybody knew their place. Everybody knew their job. And they only had to look at one another. Okay, you got that? You got that? Okay. And it worked smooth. Now, sometimes there was some shouting going on, usually my grandfather or my uncle, or uncles. If you got to move the net one way, move the net the other way, and the trade winds are blowing, you got to raise your voice. But otherwise, it was just this smoothly operating procedure. Little kids had their part. If a fish fell out of the net and was going to get washed out, to the ocean again. It was a little kid's job to go grab it, rinse it off, and go put it in the bucket. And so everybody had something to do. And the little kids loved it because they were part of this big community thing. And it was almost always like a celebration. Okay. WIPAWI serves to strengthen that culture that had almost died before I came along. In fact, neither me nor my mother speak Hawaiian. She was part of the crew that was born in the late 1920s, and they were still discouraging the use of Hawaiian. English was the way forward, and if you're going to get a good job, you had to talk English good. And so I, and one of those things was, for me, when I came back to see my cousins and hang out in Kalihiva or Hanalei, I would pick up a pidgin inflection and syntax when I was here. My mom was a terror about that. She was also an elementary school teacher, so. But she had been teased when she went to college on the mainland after having gone all the way through high school here. She was around so many Japanese people who don't have the R. So motor was moto, and car was ka. So it was a motoka. And she had a hard time getting rid of some of that. And she was teased when she got to college. And forever after, she was a bear on me and my sister. No pidgin in the house at all.
That she could hear anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. She knew when it was happening, but that was the rule.
And this was true for so many families. And so you say Waipa, part of the mission is to be able to help to restore some of the culture. Can you speak a little bit about that and specifically what that has to do with poi?
Restoring the culture has to be restored from the very bottom, and the relationship with the plants and animals that are here. Nurturing what was here, and then knowing our intimate connection with that. Waipa was kind of a model for me, for my thesis work.
What are you hoping that people are learning? Like they were learning from your example? What are you hoping they're
learning? To slow down and feel that connection with Hawaiians and the kalo. The Hawaiian term is mana, and it's a spiritual essence. And as far as I understand, it goes through everything, including what Western society considers inanimate objects. They all have mana, and they can communicate with us. Plants talk, stones talk. And it's as I've wandered around this place for most of my life, dons show themselves differently at different times. Sometimes you can see their faces, and sometimes no matter how often you look that next day, you can't see it. And I've always taken that to mean something that only has metaphysical explanations, not physical ones. To learn how to work with the land in what is, I guess, in mainland words, more a permaculture kind of design. It grows, it continues to grow, it matures, and they were great. Our ancestors were great stewards of the land. And I hope people get that from being here. I know people who come, a lot of people who've come to visit from the mainland, and they say it feels different here. And I ask how. And they said, well, and it varies, but some of the more spiritual ones said, I feel something coming up from the ground. Like, yeah, okay. Most of contemporary culture walks on concrete all the time. And I think they get NDD, nature deficit disorder. That's my diagnosis. And they just don't know. And they're so divorced from it. And that's accelerated now with these things.
Bones. Oh.
Yeah. It used to be you had time to be bored and look around and find something to do. And now it's, I'm not bored.
Grab the phone.
Yeah. I even feel the pull to do that sometimes myself now. But one of my fondest memories of this place and the culture was once we were waterproofed, they let us go. In fact, moms, aunties, grandmas, they didn't want us at home during the summer, right? We were just making a mess. And we're too loud. And all the cousins came from the other islands in the mainland, so there was quite a crew. And so we just go outside. We'll bring juice and sandwiches down to the beach for you at lunchtime. And then when you're too tired, before dinner, you can walk back out to the house. But that was perfect. Perfect. Like, and so we went fishing, we went crabbing, we salvaged old roofing sheets, the metal ones, and pounded them into canoes and made double hull canoes. And yeah, that was, and then, you know, scared the younger cousins with the big Samoan crabs and those kinds of things. Country kids. But there's a spirit here. And it's from the reactions I hear from people from outside come in. They can feel it. They don't know how to name it, but they talk about it in energy terms. A lot of the contemporary visitors, well, I was just called here. I was just called here. I could hear it calling me. I knew the name of the place before I even knew the place had a name like that. And so those non-biblical energy patterns are cultivated and celebrated. Hawaiian religion as a full thing doesn't really exist. But in parts of people at certain times, it does. It does come up. I can't, the mana thing and the rocks being sentient beings is a hard thing to deal with when you've been in Anglo-based higher education models that's not in it.
Do you feel any, or have you heard any legends or spiritual or magical stories about this place, right here where we are?
Maka'ihuva, the mountain over here.
Pointing to the mountain, yeah.
Just to the east of us here. And according to Hawaiian legend, it was the site of the first lighthouse, and it was built by Menahuni, the prior inhabitants of this place. The story goes, Menahuni, being a magical people, could not come out in the sunlight. Otherwise, they'd be turned to stone. Medusa the other way around, whatever. But fishing was their main food supply. And they could only go at night. And on calm nights and starlit nights, they could find their way back to the island, no problem. But on stormy nights, cloudy nights, they couldn't use the stars. And so they tried to put lamaku, torches, on the beach so the fishermen could follow the lights home. But that wasn't too good because they were too low and it was hard to see them. And so one guy said, well, why don't we use coconut trees? They're tall. But if we light all the coconut trees on fire, they're not gonna have any coconuts, so that's not gonna work. And so they may put torches up on the peak over here at Maka'ihuva'a, is the name of the ridge. And so then they could go further out, and it worked pretty well. And the name of that hill, Maka'ihuva'a, Maka is eyes, Ihu is nose, Va'a is canoe. The eyes at the nose of the canoe. And so that's what she had to do to get home. Point it toward the fire and go. And so that name is up there. There's all sorts, this whole coastline is loaded with legends. And
any poi related?
Yes. I kind of skipped over some of the more, well, the two deities I spoke about being the parents of humans and Kalo, well, they were father, daughter. And so telling that legend in some places, I just skip over that. But yeah, that was a pattern of Hawaiian royalty, and not necessarily Hawaiian commoners, but the royalty believed they were divine and believed that the close marriage was an important thing to keep the line sacred. But the Hawaiian gods are kind of like the Greek gods.
Troublemakers.
Randy.
And Randy. Randy Troublemakers, yes.
Yep. And so they had multiple partners. Most of the royalty was because they could only mix with other royalty. And unfortunately, that as we know, doesn't work well for very long. And so the later ali'i were severely afflicted and were nowhere near the either physical or mental status of their forebears, who were primitive warrior chiefs. Mana was a really important thing. And some more theologically oriented people have great long explanations, but the mana is something you can feel. Don't always know, but you don't always understand what it is, or else I don't. But yeah, if I've gone down to surf, all fired up to get in the water, and after I ask permission, it's no. Okay, and that's another one of those, you know. Did I hear you right? But yeah, it's I was able to feel it. My mom tried to bring me up in the Episcopal Church.
You didn't feel the mana.
I didn't feel it.
Before I let you go, anything else that you want to say about the value, the meaning, the significance of poi, of kalo, of this cycle that Waipa is creating here, of being able to malama the aina, to cultivate the lo'i, to produce poi and make it available to the community? And that's, why is that special to you?
For me personally, it reflects the activities and values that we practiced as a family before this came about. And it replicates some of those interactions, but on a slightly bigger scale. Have you been here in the summer? The summer programs and that whole lawn is filled with kids learning something. And then with the opening up of the other side, the pond, mm-hmm. and there was a whole nother push and whole more publicity, and we're starting to get better known. The Ahupua tours and so forth, I think, is a great, great addition. Because I used to do that on the side, just in my pickup truck. Bring people to poi and then go up Mauka and go Makai, and yeah, I still do that some, but oh, that's right. Okay, never mind. Where are we at?
The value to you of the cultivation of lo'i and the production of poi, and even just the presence of poi on the table.
It's a link to earlier times and earlier processes. It's a happy place, and it brings together people from all over the planet. It's not an isolationist thing. It's a come join us thing. And I still get to teach some. Teachers without classes can drive you mad with how much they talk.
Okay, teacher.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say today before we wrap up?
Yeah, thank you all for coming, and your contributions are felt in the poi today. It's going to be very extra delicious every single time you guys show up, and thank you for all your hard work. We're going to use it to feed everybody from this side of the island to the other side of the island to Ni Hao, and I feel extra grateful every time I have some Wai Pong poi with me, because I don't know, there's nothing else like it that I can really get around. So thank you all for your help today.
Thanks for listening to Kauai Community Radio. That was a pre-recorded montage of Poi Day talks from Waipa Foundation that was presented by Angela Zussman with Story for All. You can learn more about Story for All and their work at storyforall.org. It's a nonprofit organization that believes that storytelling creates healing, understanding, influences policy change, and is a good way to learn and preserve the past and inform the future. So they're an excellent organization, and they partner with KKCR to present these stories about Kauai Aina life. So you can find an archived recording of this presentation today. You'll be able to find that at kkcr.org. next week. So thanks for tuning in today. Additionally, the last uncle that was talking, that was Kealii Holden, and he just beautiful. Like, I got a little teary as he was getting teary. So thanks for listening today. I've got a few public service announcements for you, and then I will resume we'll go to the last 15 minutes of the Ivi Kupuna talks with Oha that happened last week at Waipa Foundation. Or was it Monday? It was Monday at Waipa Foundation, and we'll be able to hear the last 15 minutes of that too. So do stay tuned to Kauai Community Radio.
For the record, found a Trask family member that's also in a lot not too far away. So Mauna Kea Trask is also one of the cultural descendants. They were all given the plan, the draft plan, to review and look over and give their comments and feedbacks, as well as we sent the draft to OHA. So that was part of the consultation, and I agree with OHA's comments about that. We thought there'd be more dialogue going back and forth between us all on where we're at and before we finish that barrel treatment plan. So that was usually the process that happens. So that's, if that helps everybody to, any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Since you brought up Mauna Kea Trask, and I was going to try to stay away from outside, but we have a real problem at Wailua Nui Ahuano, and there has been no record of what is going on there with Mahuna Pu'uone. And, you know, it's to the point right now where people are thinking that Uncle Valako and the reinterment of the giants is fake. And, you know, I believe Uncle John Valako. But, you know, I mean, I'm hearing through the grapevine, oh, it's not there anymore. And I remember back in early 2000, they did archaeological trenching all throughout Coco Ponds. So what happened to all the EVs and all of that information that was there that is now no longer available?
Mahalo for the question. And because the rules were set in the very beginning that we want to keep this focus to 4400 Oneone Road. You know, if Nancy would be open to field that question offline, you know, and I just want to just mahalo for the question because it's all relative. You know, it's all relative, and then especially understanding how small the Kauai community is and how even smaller the Kauai community is for those that have been stakeholders in all the conversations around Iwi Kupuna. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mahalo the question, and if Nancy, again, would be open to field that question offline after.
I have no problem doing that, and I want to, Sherry also is a related to Milton, so she too is also a bachelor.
Nancy, hold on. You could just finish that sentence on the record.
So, no problem. I can ask your question. I can walk outside right after this and go ahead and answer it for you. But I forgot to bring in the fact that Sherry Cummings is also related to Milton, and she is also one of a cultural descendant. So she, too, was given the plan to look at and give comments to, and who she felt in her family might want to give us comments.
Mahalo nui for that, and as has been stated multiple times tonight, yeah, he ohana kakoa pau, makia aina aloha, yeah, so if we can expand those conversations, you know, to also include, you know, recognize kanaka, direct lineal descendants of kupuna that originally from this fahi, so mahalo nui.
I just want to touch on one thing that I think is super important. So I've been hearing a lot of comments throughout this meeting. And one thing that I find very distracting is if Kanaka who are speaking are not the Kanaka that should be speaking on things that do not pertain to them. And if it does pertain to you, but the community that is here that has been here from day one pertaining to One Road, they should have the floor. And any distractions to this conversation which keep happening, and Huikalamai, I do not feel comfortable just cutting people off and this is in a very specific environment, but I'm gonna go to that point. We as Ohana, I am a descendant of this Wahi. My tutupapa's lot is located near to where this is all happening. Those people who have been dug up and desecrated on that property are our Ohana. So when we speak, I just kindly ask that we speak with respect to the people, like Kuike just said, who have been here and are the Ohana of this Wahi. Because to not awamo your kuleana where you are from and where you reside and where you've been brought up and where your kupuna are buried and where your kupuna are from is going to become distracting. You cannot do everything. So I just kindly ask that we respect the Ohana that are from this Wahi. And when they speak, that you just kindly listen to them, even if you disagree. Because you can agree to disagree. But give them this opportunity to speak on what is important to them. That's all I ask. So, well, mawana kakuka kukana, we're gonna continue.
Yeah, we still have several minutes to field more questions.
Okay.
Wait, Auntie Louise had a question in regards to
Okay, pull up your kalapona. I'm making your stage. It was a very good question in regards to one of the bills where the language is speaking about Iwi that are found near a shoreline to relocate those Iwi upland. And I think it was at the bottom HB bill,
yep.
SB 166. Yes, the last section. Where it talks about when identified EV located within low-lying areas affected just like Norway, coastal erosion, take appropriate steps to move and relocate EV from impacted burial sites to areas further inland. So maybe a little bit more clarification on that. We have our own interpretation. I had my own interpretation, but maybe just clarifying a little bit more context on that specific language for Auntie. And then, is it
okay. Yeah, because in our culture, especially in Niue, they're buried there for a reason. Because when the ocean comes, they end up going out to Po. Kalai o Kalanohi, that's the entrance to Po at Niue. from Kepuhi to Makua. That's the cemetery. That is not helping. That's why I asked Nancy if it's going to benefit the protection of Kupuna Ivi. But right there on the bottom, it states that any bones found on properties that are there, that are getting eroded, are going to get moved to the mountain. Where in the mountain? That's not part of our culture. These rules are not for our culture. I'm sorry, I'm speaking for the Kupuna in the ground. Because you know what? I live in Maui, and I've seen every property. Ask Nancy, she knows all the numbers. She was working for the state back then when we were in Maui, and she was part of the desecrators. So watch who you're talking to, and all of you. Listen, this is from our hearts, because they wake me up. They talk to me. They ask me these questions that I'm relaying to you guys. So sometimes I just get kupuna. Go visit them. There's the faces. And go visit them and go ask them. But that last one is not happening. It's not happening. It's not going to happen in Maui. Sorry. They already was desecrated and moved.
Mahalo. Mahalo, Anakin, if I can just clarify the language in this legislation. What the administrator has recognized, and our administration here at OHA has recognized, is all throughout the Paiaina, because sea level rise and erosion, our kupuna are washing out. So while I can respect that, and I will respect that, on that, that's almost by design. What I want to recognize is today's generation of human, they don't respect the kapu of old. So when our kupuna are washed out, sell them to museums. This is a historical fact. So how do we protect our kupuna from being exploited, from being further desecrated? So the language and the intention in this legislation is not to displace kupuna. It is to reinter kupuna. What we've been working with SHPTI for the past couple months is trying to identify hotspots around the Paiaina. And don't ever forget, that is your kuleana, you're entitled to be consulted. So none of these projects, even should the law pass, I mean, should the bill pass into law, they still got to come and consult with you folks on a care. And if that's in fact not an accepted practice in your space, that should be law. That should be lava. And we at OHA will respect that.
The Ivi Kupuna is all buried here. Mm-hmm. And when the ocean comes up, they go back to the sea.
And
that's how it's always been. Nobody over here going to go and rob them and raid them. Only the ones on properties that are being developed.
So
that's where our desecration of Ivi Kupuna and the artifacts are being robbed. They're not being robbed off the ocean.
So again, Anake, for clarification, the language in this legislation is not to provide a space for repository for development. It is to provide a space to reenter our kupuna should they need. Yeah, should they need. Well, if that is in fact the practice of the culture and lineal descendants of this Vahipana, of this Vahimana, of this Aupua, of this Moku, we at OHA will in fact respect that. Well, again, Hikino, and I encourage you and everyone in the community that feel similar to provide testimony. Yeah, and then mahalo, because now we know. As you know, you and I come from the same space. Born and raised by Manalo.
I thought you looked familiar.
Graduating class, Kailua High School. No akanti. Yeah? No, you know. Like, we come aina. And it's the same thing that's happening in Waimanalo. Same thing. Yeah? The kupuna out there from 1964, 1962, been desecrated by the military, been pushed out, washed out. For generations, we've always kupa'a. Yeah? No. Our kupuna, there were kanu there over 100, 200, 300 years ago, 800 years ago, to be preserved in place to return to po. The kai hohonu kanalo is not the only access to po. Yeah? When we ho'i our kupuna back into the honua, that is. And the intention is for them to never see the sun again. And as mo'opuna, our kuleana is to make sure that they're never disturbed. So again, the intention of this legislation and the support from OHA is to create safe spaces that should our kupuna be washed out by natural erosion. We don't want them rolling in the surf where people can just pick them up and do what they like. Again, if every community or if any community felt the need or desire to ho'i them and swim them out into the channel and ho'i them back to Kanaloa, that is your guys' entitlement. That's your right as mo'opuna. And we will not get in your way. That's my commitment. So I just wanted to clarify the intention and the language and the legislation. And I apologize if it's not clear enough. You know, and if anybody feels any way, please show up, testify, because that's what we need. We need everybody's mana'o. We need everybody's na'o. So mahalo ana ke for the question.
So I think we're at the palo, the panina of our halavai. Walava. I'm gonna kindly ask if you can be san as we do our pule ho'u.
And before we ho'oku'u, I just want to ensure that those who have still outstanding burning questions on Zoom or even in person, if you could just write them down and we will accept those and we will take those. And then should we return to Ho'imai and should we be invited back to have conversation kuka kuka, that we will be better prepared to pane.
Are you guys going to come back again for whatever it means?
Yeah, so
there will be a visitation.
So as time goes on, as things progress, our commitment to you folks this evening is the same commitment that we made to you on November 4th.
Right.
Yeah, that we will kupa'a with you guys and that we will inform you as we at OHA is informed. And our commitment is to ho'imai and return back should you welcome us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and then we are here till things are pau'pono.
Okay.
That's our commitment from the Office of Hawaiian Affairs.
Okay. Nolaila, I hope everyone heard that OHA as an Office of Hawaiian Affairs have committed to see this all the way through till it's pau'pono. Yeah. I just want to say mahalo nui. Let us pa'a kalima if you can. Ho'a'o, touch someone's shoulder. Let's pani this and do it. Make a polo like, hoi, queen. Dear Heavenly Father, as we conclude this meeting with our community here at Ha'ena Wainiha in regards to our kupuna and to the desires of our hearts to malama them to the utmost that we can in this day and age, we ask thee, Lord, and actually thank you for allowing us to gather this day for Waipa Foundation for providing the venue, for the me'ai prepared by the Halepule, and mahalo nui for just allowing us to conduct ourselves and to share mana'o to uplift one another. And we all know that it is nighttime. So as we hoku ourselves on this wahi to go home, wherever that may be, we ask thee to have thy spirit to be with us, protect us from all harm and evil. And if there be any contention within our hearts and within our minds, anything that is not of thee, we ask thee, Lord, to please help us to manage it and to let us release it. And as we stand together in solidarity for